This is the Paper Planes podcast, where we take a deep dive into some of the week's most notable business and marketing stories and interview high-performing business leaders and marketing professionals to find out their lessons for success.
There's more money in getting the product out to people than there is in creating it, because there's always a cheaper way to create the product. I should be confident and have the posture to actually ask a question, because if you don't, it's a no anyway. Take action, learn the lesson, evolve.
Welcome to the Paper Planes podcast, episode number 67. We have a gentleman today on the show by the name of Craig Schultz, who is working in the network marketing space. Now, that may put a shiver up some of the spines of the people listening to this, because over the past, network marketing, direct sales has somewhat of a questionable reputation. I myself have been, or people have attempted to indoctrinate me into it twice in my past. Once very famously in a small room in Winchester, the UK, when I was about 22 and very fresh and knew nothing of the world. And we're kind of caught by surprise. And it's one of those memories that sticks in my brain forever and ever. But it has changed a lot. Network marketing has changed over the years. And Craig is going to talk to us about that. He has experienced pretty much every type of business approach in terms of, you know, corporate, franchise, network marketing, and so on and so forth. So if anybody is qualified to talk about this stuff, it is this man. He now does a lot of training and educating in network marketers, helping them earn what they believe they're worth. So very interesting. We talk about network marketing as well from a business point of view. If you're looking for distribution of a product or a service and so on and so forth, he is the right man to talk to. The usual bits and pieces: rate and review us on iTunes, come and follow us on Instagram. Thepodcastboss.com is Gilberto, who does our producing and generally stitches this shit together so that it sounds much better than when we actually did it. And finally, myself and Matt, come and follow us or find us if you're interested in help and you need help in digital marketing. We are www.flypaperplanes.co. If you want to read our brand story and our little manifesto about who Paper Planes are and why we do what we do, then it is on the website. And I hope you like it. That's pretty much it. Let's just jump straight into the interview with Craig Schultz. So welcome to the Paper Planes podcast, Craig Schultz. How are you?
Very good. Thanks, Sam.
And you're down in sunny Melbourne today, aren't you?
Yeah, nice and cold here.
God, I keep bagging people in Melbourne there because the weather's just terrible. And I presume you didn't watch the State of Origin last night, because people in Melbourne have got no idea what the State of Origin is, really.
No, I actually didn't know that it was on, but social media quickly told me that it was.
So look, give us a little bit of a background. Let's give us the 60-second elevator pitch about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, look, I'm an entrepreneur, always been an entrepreneur, let's say, and I did go through the corporate world, got a good job, become an engineer, the two uni degrees, but I bought my first business age 21 because I knew that working for someone wasn't for me. Spent 12 years franchising a business in the fitness industry, set up 22 franchises, and I moved in about 2006, 2008, that sort of zone when social media was becoming a little bit more prominent, and I moved into the direct selling industry. So I've been in that industry since that time, and I'm doing that now. I've got a business in 100 countries, earned over $1 million many years in a row, and just traveled the world just sharing a story about a company and product line.
We'll talk all about that in a minute. I just want to get, and you just said one thing there that's obviously, you know, quite important for people to understand. You started off, you know, your education as an engineer. What made you switch? Was there a light bulb moment? Was that, you said you didn't want to work for anybody else. Was that one light bulb moment, or was that like a, you know, ongoing realization over a number of years that you didn't want to work for somebody else?
Well, I guess for me, like, you know, when you're brought up, it's always, you know, get a good education, get a good job when you do that. And then when I was in that corporate environment where I was turning up at 8 a.m. and leaving at 5 or 6 p.m., you know, that sort of was always wearing me down. I'm like, you know, I'm not the type of person that can just be, let's say, dictated to all day with what you do. And so I was always just open-minded and thinking well and truly outside the box from even when I was in that job. Like, we had flexi time project and I used to always work out, if I could get this job done quicker, does that give me the ability to have time off? You know, so I just think trading time for money for me was not the plan that I was going to follow through with.
A lot of people don't realize that until much later in life. I mean, you know, that, it's interesting that you learned that early on. Was there still sort of pressure on you to still sort of go into that corporate, continuing that corporate vein at 21? Were your family kind of telling you that, you know, you've done all this education as an engineer, you better start being an engineer?
Yeah, well, definitely. I would say there was a little bit of disappointment, but if I rewind before that, when I was, you know, 13, 14 years of age, my next door neighbor actually thought he was going to get a young kid doing a job for him for $5 an hour. And I turned my whole shed into nearly a manufacturing plant and worked out how to get $25 an hour and have family members working for me. So my mind was always ticking over from a very young age, but there's no question, spending 5 years at university, you know, you invest a lot of money and time into that. And I did that. And, you know, only spending 2 years in that profession was probably disappointing to many. But it was also a big driver for me to go, look, I'm giving up something good here that I worked hard for. I better make something of myself.
It's one of those funny questions. When you speak to a lot of entrepreneurs, they started really early on. Where was you? I mean, you say you had family members working for you. Were you doing things like as a teenager, or, you know, how early did you kind of get that bug that, you know, there was something more to, you know, just working that 9 to 5?
Look, I grew up in a mining town on the west coast of Tasmania, and I had to leave home when I was 15 just to go beyond year 10 at school. So I had spent a bit of time working in the mines, and I knew the hard work I was doing there was definitely no career. But I guess, you know, I was always, you know, a creative thinker, and I've always tried to work out how to do things better. So improve productivity, and I can always just remember that was sort of the way my brain operated pretty early on.
Is that something that runs in the family?
Not necessarily. No, my parents, you know, no, definitely not. My brothers are entrepreneurial builders. Like, they've bought, built, and sold their house 3 or 4 times, but yeah. You know, they don't use any technology. They're old school entrepreneurs in a way.
Do you think that's something entrepreneurs are made, or they evolve over time? Do you think you're born one, or do you think that's something you can learn?
I think everything you can learn. I mean, a good friend of mine, you know, Jack DeLosa, who I do a lot of work with, he always says, you know, everything's a skill and skills can be learned. You know, happiness can be a skill. I think entrepreneurship can be learned, but I think there's something inside certain people that triggers and sparks but I think it can be something that can be learned, but I think natural entrepreneurship is where magic can often happen.
What made you do engineering in the first place? Was that something that you generally had an attraction for? Because I did the same thing. I went to university and did a law degree, and I, you know, walked out of university on age 21 and just went, well, I'm never doing that again. You know, what was it that sort of attracted you to doing that in the first place?
Well, that there wasn't a career that I always wanted to follow. What happened there the Tasmanian government, they had this elite program, which was a special cadetship where they were trying to improve innovation and tech. And they offered these cadetships where you went and worked on site plus get your university degree, and they're offering like six a year. And because I left home when I was so young, I was sort of self-funded in a way. I just said, oh, I'm going to go and win one of those cadetships, and that put me on that path, and that's the main reason I probably went through that career.
So, well, you know, at that point, you've done that, and you go, right, well, I want to own my own business. I want to start my own thing. I want to be my own boss. What's day one look like from you there? Because I'm interested, you know, for other people when they're in the same sort of situation, you know, what's, you know, you've made that decision. You want to go out on your own. What were the first things that you did?
Well, I always say to myself, and when I tell my story, which I often do, I always say, you know, it's fair to say at age 21, it's hard to say you've really got any business skills to be running a business, but you're probably even lacking in life skills at age 21. But what I always say to people is, well, what I lacked in business and life skills, I made up in absolute desire and action taken and a will to do whatever it took for success. So I was not a great reader, but I would read, you know, for an hour before I went to bed on sales. I'd read for an hour on leadership, and anything I could learn, I learned. And I was very fortunate, which if this can happen for anyone, it can really help significantly. One of my first clients was an incredible business person, and he taught me everything, you know, from property investing to investing in the stock market to business to money management to, you know, company structures, absolutely everything. He's still my mentor today. And every decision I make for business, I just cross-reference with him. So a mentor, age 21, was very lucky. But, day one, it was like, where do I start here? And it was just, I believed in myself and I was just prepared to do what it takes for success.
You've mentioned Jack DeLosa, obviously. We've had one of his team, Peter, on the show, talking about the entourage and things like that. Peter Lakovich, and you mentioned mentors. You mentioned Jack DeLosa, the entourage. The entourage is very much built on that kind of mentorship thing. Do you think if someone's out there, irrespective of their age, whether they're 21 or 41 or 61, and they want to go and start a business, how important is finding a good quality mentor for you?
Oh, look, I mean, pay for it if you have to. If you don't, like I would, and I heard an interview with Janine Ellis just went and asked so many people if she could just sit down and have a coffee with them and pick their brains. Do that, but you need to, you know, really level up and have, you know, I always talk about if I buy a property or I buy anything, business decision, whatever it is, I want to cross-reference. And, you know, just in case there's something I'm not thinking about, I always do that. And the one thing I found with the entourage, it's nearly a bit of a one-stop shop, you know, whether it's marketing, sales, HR, finance, you know, it's a paid program. If you have to pay for it, you know, you do it. Don't try and work it out yourself, because you'll save yourself a lot of time and money for having really good people around you.
Let's talk a little bit about Jack DeLosa. Obviously, you've known him for a while. If you go onto your LinkedIn profile, there's a lot of interviews and, you know, with him. Yeah. I know this podcast is about you, but I'm just interested to get your thoughts on Jack and what you've learned from him over the years.
Well, he's an incredible entrepreneur. Extremely sharp. He's, you know, what I would call very visionary. He can see things happening, but he's got his finger on the pulse of all areas of business. So he knows business numbers. So if your numbers aren't working, he understands that. He knows marketing and sales incredibly well. I think he's always at the forefront of innovation and world's best practice. And, you know, he's still a young entrepreneur too, like he's, you know, his early 30s, but incredibly switched on person.
What have you taken from your, you know, what's perhaps one thing you've learned from him? I mean, aside from the numbers thing, let me talk about that, because I think that's probably something that, that's a lesson that I see a lot when I sit down with businesses, is that people don't know their numbers. And one of the big excuses you get from entrepreneurs is they always say, well, I'm not very good at numbers. That's not my skill set. And again, I've had kind of conversations and discussions with people to say, look, if you don't know your numbers, you should learn them. You should live, breathe your numbers. And then some people will say, well, you know, you don't have to live or breathe them. You just have to find someone that you trust that can understand them and help explain them to you. Where do you kind of sit in that, you know, that thought?
I think you need to know the numbers. And I know, you know, and Jack would say in his story, there was times when he had to know the numbers in his business, but, you know, it's not his bread and butter, and it's not something that he's passionate about. So he has got someone in that does do the numbers, etc. And I sit in that camp too. And I probably, you know, really hammered that home from listening to, you know, Ray Dalio's audiobook Principles, where he said, fire yourself from anything you're not very good at. And for me, one of the lessons I've really taken out of Jack was, I'm not great at tech. I'm not great at doing imagery, videography, any of that stuff, but I know how important it is for me. So I've now have people that can do that working with me and for me.
Do you know what? On a complete side note here, I often have a long conversation with people about that Ray Dalio book, because I hated that book. And I am in a minority, I'm in a very small minority about that book, because everyone else says what a great book it is, but I just did not enjoy that in the slightest.
I got a lot of value out of it, but
And I think it's because I do a lot of writing, and I would like to consider myself a writer now, I just find the way that Ray Dalio writes was so irritating that it just, I lost the point of the book by the time I got to the end of it, because I was so frustrated in the manner in which he was communicating. But anyway, I digress, because I have made this point several times before and I shan't go off on that tangent again.
I'm a slow reader, so I consume by listening. So I listen to the audio.
In fact, the last couple of podcasts we've had quite a few conversations about audiobooks and the benefits of audiobooks, but I tend to do both. So I've always got two books on at the go at once, one that I'm reading and one that I'm listening to in the car. When I'm doing what I'm doing now, which is, unfortunately, they're both science fiction books, I the two stories tend to merge into one another, because I can't remember what's happened in either one. So, anyway, I digress again. I guess one of the things I really wanted to talk to you about today was that network marketing and direct sales, or whatever you want to call it. And the reason I wanted to have a conversation with that about was twofold. Was number one, the lady that organizes these podcasts for me, Sarah, she's very big into that network marketing, direct sales area. And she's building a business in that space. The second thing is that it tends to have negative connotations. Again, from potentially more from its history and previous players back in the past. So I wanted to ask you a nice broad overarching question first up, is that, how do you see that marketing, that network marketing industry in 2019? Is it healthy? Is it growing? Who are the big players that we should be looking at?
Well, I guess, you know, I've worked in the corporate world. So products and services moved. It was an audio book called The Next Millionaires by Professor Paul Zane Pilsner. And he talked about where the big growth trends were in 2006 to 2018. And he talked about, e-commerce businesses, direct selling businesses, product distribution businesses, information businesses, and wellness businesses were going to be the five big trends for the next millionaires.
Yeah.
And that was when the light bulb went off for me that network marketing was an industry that was going to really be one of the players to create the next millionaires. So I basically really started to learn and understand that industry very well. So I'd work in the corporate world with a big business that can ship and move product. I've owned a traditional business, I've franchised businesses, and I've been in the direct selling industry. So I've sort of been in all categories of way product goes to consumer. And the thing that I always say to people about network marketing, it's no staff, it's low risk, it's low entry level, unlimited opportunity and unlimited leverage if you do the business behaviors correctly. Now, the thing is, like any investment, there's there's due diligence that you have to do. Mm-hmm. And there's 10,000 different companies to choose from. So, you can choose buying a bad franchise business, or you can choose, going into selling DVDs in a traditional business. They're bad business decisions.
Yeah.
You can join a bad company. But the thing that gives network marketing sometimes it's bad perceptions, let's say, is the way people approach people. Because 97% of people do it the wrong way, and they would come up to you and go, "Simon, hey, you have a podcast, you have a big audience, join my business and you'll make all this money."
Yeah.
And you'll join and you'll do nothing, and then you'll go, "Oh, I just got burnt by a network marketing opportunity." Now, you didn't get burnt by the network marketing opportunity. It's a business. You did nothing. You made nothing.
Mm.
But the person that introduced you really didn't set you up to win. And if you get the due diligence right and you become a professional, you can do this industry incredibly well. I'm eternally grateful.
And I think one of the, great point you make there about there are bad franchises in the world. Nobody really looks at franchise industry and goes, that it's a dodgy industry or is questionable industry. People just accept that franchises exist and franchises are out there, but there are some terrible franchises. And, there's a lot of franchises that are going through, some major issues at the moment. Some of the retail food group franchises, the 7-Elevens, those kind of things. People never question the franchise model because it is a model that's been around for a long time. But it's funny that people question the network marketing model, and it hasn't been a model that's been around equally as a long time. But it seems to attract more criticism than some of the other businesses models out there.
Yeah, but it's just, again, that's changing because of the way the internet operates now and social media, and so you now no longer have to go and drag a bucket round of product knocking on people's doors. It can be done more social selling. But the industry's been around 100 years. Back in the 70s, I believe franchising was nearly deemed an illegal business model. A highly popular business model that I spent 12 years in. If you adopt a franchise mindset to network marketing, when I say that, you're looking for the individual that would buy the franchise.
Mm.
So they got the hundreds of thousands of dollars. They want to get a heading license, so they're going to buy a business. But then you provide them with a franchise style training model and set them up to win. You'll have success in this industry.
The question I wanted to ask around network marketing, direct sales, what do you guys prefer to call it? Is it more network marketing or direct sales? Is there a terminology that you prefer?
I'd probably say network marketing, because it's network and it's marketing.
Yeah.
So that's, it's funny how, people will buy a product that Kim Kardashian will promote on her social media that she's got no alignment with, doesn't probably even know that it works, but people just trip over themselves to buy it.
Yeah.
So they won't buy a product off a friend or a colleague or a contact. It's a mindset shift that's changing, but It's quite a funny thing.
The question I wanted to ask you was about this, was to look, I wanted to actually look at it from the other side of the coin and look at it from a business perspective. If you're a business and you're looking to go out into market and you're looking at all the options that you've got, we've got a business at the moment, we're one of our clients at the moment that sells confectionery, chocolate, and they have opportunities to take their product to market in, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 different channels. So, you know, you can white label the product, make a product for another brand. You can sell it direct in store. You can sell it online. You can license the recipes out to someone in a different state, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's all these options and all these opportunities and different channels of taking the product to market. If you're a business owner and you're sitting there going, right, well, you know, it might be a new product, it might have been around for some time, and you're thinking about how you go to market, why would you suggest to them that network marketing is a good opportunity? And does it suit certain products over other products?
Well, I think the second part of the question, if you look at the top 20 biggest companies in the industry, they're probably, you know, 80% fit into the, you know, the cosmetic, nutrition, wellness, anti-aging umbrella. So they're probably more popular products, but there have been companies that have had chocolate and they have, you know, marketed phone plans and travel deals and things like that. Mm. So I would say stick to what, you know, the numbers say. So all the big billion-dollar companies are in that wellness, nutrition, cosmetic, beauty, anti-aging. Yeah. The reason, so I wouldn't necessarily start a network marketing company to do that. I would go to a company and see if you can do an arrangement. And the reason you would do that is because the distribution's already in play.
Right,
so if you've got
right.
a million distributors out there and you know, you've got your chocolate there and yeah. they add that product line to their basket, you've got potential instant sales, low cost, low risk and mass upside. And in the company Jeunesse Global, that's happened. I've seen a lot of times interesting biotech companies bringing a product to them and saying, you've got the distribution, let's do a commercial arrangement and bang.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that makes absolute sense. I mean, it's, you know, is there a space in that network marketing for, I mean, do you think there's a space that isn't exploited? I mean, all the things that you've listed there are very B2C consumer products, and I guess to a degree skewed to the female market as well, you know, that
yes.
sort of anti-aging wellness there. Is there a space that's not been exploited there that you think is an opportunity?
Well, I've seen it happen in chocolate. I've seen it happen with wine. I've seen it happen with travel. I've seen it happen with phone plans and electricity. And all of those have had short. None of them have lasted what you'd say the test of time. You know,
right.
they've come in as something sexy, something interesting. Oh, well, you've got to call people anyway, so why not have a, you know, get a commission for referring people phone plans? You know,
yeah.
it just hasn't lasted the longevity card to date.
I guess a phone plan really is you buy it once and it might last you a couple of years. It's not something that you're continuing to buy.
Yeah, that's right. The things that are doing that opportunities are just really new breakthroughs in, you know, anti-aging spaces. They sort of, it's got to be unique and the company has to be really global, have a really good global footprint, because if you can get onto social media and your business is open in India, well, you've got 1.2 billion people to market to.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I really like what you said, you know, a couple of minutes back about the fact that you guys have an established network and that reaching out, and I guess this is a lesson, you know, whether you're talking business through, you know, network marketing or anything, is that partnerships, building partnerships, valuable partnerships where you can reach more people, exponentially reach more people than you could if you were just doing it on your own, is a massive opportunity for anyone looking to expand their business.
Absolutely. And that was one of the key point takeaways from The Next Millionaires, Professor Paul Zane-Pilz, that talks about product distribution over product creation was going to be a good opportunity for people.
Mm.
There's more money in getting the product out to people than there is in creating it, because there's always a cheaper way to create the product and you just cap your margins.
Looking at it now from the other side of the coin, so we've looked at it from the business side, and I completely see that stacks up from a distribution model. You know, there's no doubt in that, especially if you're trying to target that kind of, you know, that demographic and you've got that sort of product. Looking at it from the other side of the coin, from Sarah's side of the coin, obviously one of the challenges with network marketing, as I've seen it in the past, is that, as you said, people approach you in the wrong way. The challenge that I've seen is that you end up turning that network of friends that you've got into customers, and
yes,
you sometimes don't necessarily want a friend as a customer or a customer as a friend and vice versa. You know, you want to keep them separate. How do you tackle that challenge?
Well, the thing is, for me, everything I do is all around belief. So I'm a natural referrer. If I go to a gym, that gym's going to have 50 new clients. If I drink a wine and I like it, if I go to a restaurant and I like it, that, you know, there's two restaurants in Melbourne that would probably earn in six figures off the amount of business I've bought them over the last 10 years, just off my referrals.
Yeah.
So if I looked at, say, the Jeunesse business opportunity, which I'm in, so I'll talk about that, and I took the youth enhancement product out and put cigarettes in, I wouldn't be able to be in business there because I've never had a cigarette in my life and I don't believe in it.
No,
but I believe wholeheartedly in the health benefits of our product. So at the very least, I want to be letting my friends, family, my loved ones at least understand and know about the product. Then I'll leave the choice with them whether they want to join. And then there's no confusion about the relationship. I've told you the information about the product. You've made a decision that you're a customer and there's no line. 90 plus percent of your network in your business will be customers, not distributors. So, you know, you just, if you explain it correctly, you believe in what you're telling people, let them make the decision and then it's all good.
How do you, and this is a question not just for those people in network marketing, but this is a broad business question, because when we see a lot of clients who are successful and they've grown to a certain size, they often say that referrals and recommendations has been the backbone of their growth. How do you teach business people to generate referrals and recommendations? Is there a sort of, you know, a magic formula or things that they should be doing in order to, you know, get people referring them?
Well, most importantly, you always ask. So every person, let's say I'm asking you now, Simon, I would be coming to you and explaining what I'm doing. I say, I know you know a lot of people. If you know anyone that might be interested in looking at some youth enhancement products or weight loss products or want to make some extra money, can you keep me in mind?
Yeah.
So importantly, you need to make sure that you put that in play in your sales pitch. And you know, Peter Lakovic, who is on here, who was one of the people on here, he's great at sales. And we went away to Hawaii, and that was one thing he said. He said, look, you just always remember to ask everyone for referrals.
I think that's something that people are terrified of doing, is you know, saying to a customer or a client, you know, can you pass my details on to anybody else that you might know? What, you know, I think people are scared of, that is probably one of the most fearful things of people in business, for fear that, I mean, well, that's my question to you. Why are people scared of doing that?
It's belief. Like, if I believe in what I'm doing, I should be confident and have the posture to actually ask a question, because if if you don't, it's a no anyway. So let's just say you do it 100 times and you get three yeses. That's three more than if you haven't asked. Yeah, so, what's it? No, no's just next opportunity. At least people know what you're doing.
I think there's also an element of imposter syndrome. A lot of people are sort of saying, well, if I ask people for referral, I'm going to suddenly get if I get a no, that's going to expose me that they weren't pleased with what I did, or they weren't pleased with the product they bought from me. And all of a sudden, you know, this kind of idea that I'm in business and successful all comes down like a house of cards. You know, I think people are scared that, you know, all of a sudden their confidence is going to be shattered by somebody saying no.
I 100% agree. And being in this industry, I see fear holds a lot of people back. And, you know, people are not prepared to get out of their comfort zone and wear no's with a badge of honor. They'll be in for a rocky road.
How do you deal with rejection? I mean, do you still get rejection at this point in your career? And what sort of instills that confidence in you every day?
I always talk about, you know, take action, learn the lesson, evolve. And if I'm getting a no, I'm taking the action at least. I'm always refining my approaches. But look, for me, you know, it's again, it's your loss, you know, I'm trying to help you. It's sort of, you know, if you have that sort of attitude that you're, you have that attitude that, I'm just trying to help you here, your loss. It's sort of, it's okay. Like your dreams are, you know, need to be way, way bigger than, you know, the odd no here and there. And, you know, if you think about where you're heading in life, and the long game and what that would mean for your family, you know, a no here and there is not that bad. And I get a lot of them. So it's all good.
Interestingly, I want to kind of ask you now about how you know your own personal motivation, and this is more of a personal question from my side of things, because after we had Peter on the show, we actually met up with him the week after. He happened to be in Brisbane at the time because he's based in WA, and we sat down with him for an hour and we talked about our business. So me and my business partner Matt, we talked about our business, and One of the dangers that he sort of said to us, he goes, you know, the danger for you guys is you're doing all right. You're not, you know, we don't scratch around for clients. We're not, you know, we're not living day to day in terms of, you know, revenue and things like that. We're comfortable enough. He said the danger is complacency, that you get comfortable, that you're earning that revenue, you're earning that money, and it's really just, you just keep going, keep ticking over. You're in that sort of position. You're earning, you know, good money, seven figures, growing a business. What keeps you motivated? What keeps you wanting to get up the next day and achieve more?
Look, I always set myself. So I'm a big property investor. When I say big, I've probably got 10, 11 houses, you know, over $6.5 million worth of property. But I always have mini goals financially on what I want to achieve. And one of my goals last year was to buy a holiday house, on the Mornington Peninsula, just off the beach, where I could just duck off for the weekend and come back. And so I could work quite remotely. So when I've added effectively $1 million, a house just sitting there waiting for me to go to, it sort of keeps you motivated to keep working. But I think for me, and when I look at when I've transitioned into different careers or different businesses, I've lost the passion. And for me right now, I'm as passionate and as hungry as ever with what I do. I love what I do. You know, I spend a lot of time with Peter and Jack, and they often ask me, you know, similar questions that you've asked this year. I say, hey, my heart's aligned to what I do. So while I'm passionate about it, I do it. And the day I'm not passionate about it anymore, I'll go and do something else, and I'll get back to the top of that anyway.
Is there something you're passionate about outside of what you do from a work perspective? What kind of gets you motivated beyond work?
I really love property as a investment strategy, but just I love getting online and looking what's available and is that a deal, is that not a deal? So I spend a bit of time doing that. I'll go to auctions all the time. I've got a few houses that I could do developments with, so I may go down and do a bit of that down the path. So I love that. But travel and experiences, I classify myself as a foodie. So I really, I've been to over 100 different cities around the world, and, collecting, the one thing about travel is it's great for conversation. So you can nearly go into any room, anywhere, anytime, meet some random stranger, and all of a sudden you're best friends from Bora Bora. I love to travel and experiences and, more luxury experiences at the moment, more so than adventurous. But, it's good if you can go to a restaurant that you dream of going to and you're not worrying about looking at the bill. That sort of does keep you motivated to tick off some more bucket list items like that.
What's your favourite city in the world then?
I love Italy collectively as a country through all the cities. There's beaches, there's history, there's wine regions, there's, beauty. But probably, there's a buzz about being in New York. Everyone says that. I think, I love going there. I've been there a handful of times and I'd go back tomorrow. But as a country, I think I love going to Italy.
Yeah. Last few questions then. I normally ask people about brands and things like that, but I think the opportunity I've got here with you is that you sound like you consume a lot of audio books and books and things like that. So I'm interested to get your suggestions about a couple of books or audio books, whichever, that people should be, that people should pick up and read that you would recommend.
Look, I think for me at the moment, I'm spending a lot of time on YouTube and watching YouTube shows. I'll go to the gym and I'll put, Gary Vee on for half an hour or Jack DeLosa or Gerard Adams or someone like that that's really prominent on YouTube. But audiobooks, Rocket Fuel is an interesting book if you're in business about visionary and integrators and how important they are for driving a business forward. I love How to Win Friends and Influence People. It's old, but the value you get out of that in terms of building relationships is priceless. Something a bit different if you want to improve culture in your business, the Fish book series. I adopted a lot of the principles out of Fish into my franchises for gyms, and it was all around building culture, keeping customers, creating raving fans. And The Tipping Point, I was talking to someone the other day about The Tipping Point. I learned a great referral strategy, which I'm happy to share with you, from that book. And every customer that come into my gym in their free trial, I used to ask them, are you, you're obviously local. Who's your favorite, hairdresser? Who's your favorite masseuse? What's your favorite cafe? And based on their response, I knew straight away if they were a good referrer or not. So if they just rattled out, oh, you've got to go to this hairdresser and blah, 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 I'll let them know about the potential of my referral program. And I would drive referrals crazily in my gym by asking and just waiting for their response. If they sort of said, oh, I don't know, I don't really go to a cafe, you sort of go, well, this person's not really going to be a good referrer.
Okay, cool, nice one. Second to last question then, we're almost halfway through the year. What have you got? What have you got lined up for the rest of the year? Anything sort of big on the horizon that is going to, that we should know about or keep an eye on?
Well, I've got network marketing, which is a pure word of mouth social selling concept, but we've been involved with Jack and Peter and the Entourage group. You know, I've really taken the approach of adopting world best practice. So for me, I've launched my own YouTube show. I've set up all the marketing funnels because I feel that social media is now really gearing a lot more towards paid advertising if you want to get seen. Yeah. I'm sort of following that trend. I've got a really, what I call a content machine happening, where I've got people working on breaking up my keynote speeches into, you know, the micro content pieces. So I'm sort of trying to adopt the, you know, the main, let's call them thought leader processes into my strategy for business. Mm. But travel wise, I'm just off to New Zealand and Bora Bora next week. I go through Europe on a 1 month tour. I go to China, India, Africa this year, Singapore. But I'm going to countries that I've never been to before, like Lebanon, Russia, Latvia, Sweden as well. So I've got lots of good experiences in the horizon.
Cool. Last question then. If people want to reach out to you, if they want to ask you a question or just generally bug you a little bit, what's the best way for them to do that?
Look, I'm probably Facebook under my name. I'm not sure if you put the links in, but the main...
Yes, we will do. We'll put them in. Yep.
The main social channels are Facebook, Insta, YouTube, LinkedIn, quite prominent there. I have my own web brand where I adopt the approach of providing high quality content, which, you know, it gets into shareable style content.
Yeah.
So I'm not a big, heavy daily blogger. I'll write something big and, you know, very useful. Just the usual sites, cool. Email.
Awesome. Mate, thank you very much for your time. There was a little bit of a slow start with us and technology. It sounds like neither of us are particularly good at this technology thing. And quite frankly, I ought to be a lot better, seeing as I've done 60 of these shows. But appreciate your patience at the start, and really enjoyed talking to you. So thank you for being on the show.
Thanks, Simon. I appreciate being on the show. And as they say, you've low tech, high check. I love what people are doing out there with educating and that. So I enjoy being on shows like yours, and, you know, I wish you all the best, and get it up over 100 episodes soon.
Yeah, hopefully I'll have worked out the tech by that point. Yeah. No worries, mate. Thanks. All right. Thank you for your time. Thank you very much for being with us again. If this was your first time here, thank you. And if you have been here before, what the hell are you doing coming back again? But seriously, we appreciate you listening in every week. Other than that, rate and review us on iTunes. Come and see our website, flypaperplanes.co. Otherwise, we will see you next week.